some things are happening here. I think, let's see, Judy is now fully vaccinated.
Fully immunized. It's the fully immunized, they say. Yeah, whatever.
Right. I got my first shot and I'm second one coming up on April 20th. So, so hooray for us. Let's just
stay away from all those variants, right?
Yes. Well, actually, let's talk a little bit. I don't want to obsess on COVID, but let's just talk a little bit about that here. And I'm actually going to.
You know something about that? Oh, about what's going on in Cambridge. Okay.
So I wanted to, just say a whoops. I'm there's always some kind of fiddling around here to get where I want to go. Here we go. You know, the embarrassment of Zoom silliness here. Okay. So here's what I wanted to speak to. Okay. So hopefully that's all visible. Yes?
Yes, it is.
All righty. So the numbers are continuing to climb. For a while, they were actually accelerating ever so slightly, which was kind of annoying me. But in the last week or so, there seems to be some attenuation that is discernible here.
Yeah.
And so I think what you're really seeing is kind of this, it's like a battle now between the rate of vaccination and the rate at which these variants are kind of rolling themselves out. Mm-hmm. And it very much varies on different parts of the country, but here in Massachusetts and specifically in Cambridge, it seems like the vaccinations are just barely starting to get the upper hand now.
This is only people that get tested, right?
Right. This is just people test, which is maybe,
who knows?
It's an indicator of what is the actual number of people infected are certainly higher than that.
Right.
But just in terms of the testing.
Right.
But the thing is I do get read a lot into the 7-day averages. So we had the early peak, almost a year ago now.
Yeah.
And then we had the big fall rush into the post year. And then very recently, it was like climbing again. Oh, no. But it seems to be breaking and coming down again now. So again, my hope is renewed. Now, I have to say that there's one thing a friend posted. It was from a statistical forecaster of some some knowledge about infectious diseases. Yeah. And I actually, because it's nice to see things that are hopeful.
Yeah.
So what I saw, it was actually posted on Facebook, but I've been put in touch with this statistical person, I get a little bit more insight about it.
Yeah.
But basically, what it does is it superimposes the original COVID-19, which seems to be fading away, the new variant. Now, there may be another variant to add in.
There's
on the
a couple thing. More. That there's the Brazilian, and then there, yeah.
Right. So there may be a little bit more to pad into that. But basically, if you think of it just in terms of, infections. The forecasters, which is factoring in a lot of things, including susceptibility, vaccine rates,
right,
the spread of the different variants, which is all kind of, as quantified.
Right. Yeah.
So you make a model, and the model basically suggests, all right, we are at a little bit of a rise, around the country still, but there's at least, according to some forecasters, there may come a point in mid-May where that just starts to just tailing off. And then possibly even sometime in the summer, late summer, we actually could be largely looking in the rearview mirror. Mm. And I put this picture up here only because it was one of the more hopeful things I had seen in a good long while, So I kind of thought it was worth mentioning is that this is not something that has to be seen as forever.
Right.
I was a little horrified, by the way, to see them in a Texas Major League Baseball stadium basically saying 100% capacity. I said, maybe that's a little too soon.
Texas has opened up a while ago. I mean, they don't care.
I know. Yeah. But their numbers aren't looking horrible right now. So
I know. Well, there's all this. I haven't read it. There's a whole thing about Sweden and how did they fare? Because they never did.
Yeah.
You
achieve herd immunity in a variety of ways. One
That's
is just
right.
let everybody get
let
infected,
everybody die
right?
or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That's one way to get through it. Right. Yeah. It's terrible.
I don't know.
So anyway. So that's really what I just wanted to say about COVID. And I don't think it's a whole lot more to say. Actually, one thing that's kind of related, though, is that the schools are largely opening for the lower grades already.
Well, it was a state mandate. Yeah.
Right. But it was like in Cambridge, I think it was like, I forget what, I mean, you still have some opt-outs, but it was
I know. Yeah. There's about 600 kids in the high school out of what, 1500?
Or yeah. Right. So later in toward the end of April is when that should be kind of essentially opening up again.
Oh, because they have to go. Because I know kids that don't want to go.
Right. Well, then that's going to be an issue. A lot of people are getting used to this.
Well, it's just that they didn't think it was worth it. But anyway.
Right. But actually, the other thing, too, is that a lot of businesses now and office space, lab researchers and academic people, whatever, have to some degree become acclimated to these new possibilities of remote work. And it's going to be interesting to see how things really shake out quantitatively in terms of vacancies and occupancy places in Kendall Square, which were absolutely vacant for a good while.
Well, I'm wondering how much lab work can be done remotely. Apparently, it can
for the most part, like real wet lab stuff. That those are the people who had to come in for sure.
So it's a lot of Kendall Square. Yeah,
but that's not all of it. And if you were a person who's doing the statistical analysis and doing software development work or whatever, you know, so for somebody like that, you know, it's a whole nother story.
We won't know the outcome of this for a while.
Yeah, I mean, Harvard Summer School, I'll be teaching Harvard Summer School again. Mm-hmm. That's 100% remote this summer. Yeah. But the word already is that for Harvard, and that includes Harvard Extension School, so my fall classes are planned to be
in person.
But the truth is now is that there's this whole new market has opened up for online learning now that accelerate. I mean, that's been opening for years, but it's accelerating because of this.
Who's going to pay for a Harvard education just to do it remotely? I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, but if it's a cut rate deal to just take the classes through extension.
I'm not talking about what you do. I'm talking about regular Harvard.
Well, there's going to be a little bit of a day of reckoning for some of the major universities.
I know.
Because the mythology of the on-campus experience as the be-all, end-all may have been a little broken now, you know?
Yeah.
So,
a little side, real quick side thing about Harvard. I'm really into March Madness or whatever, although the women weren't allowed to use it, which I didn't know that. Anyway, the Final Four, so I watched a lot of the games. I just learned was that none of the Ivy Leagues they canceled all their seasons this year. Did you know that?
I vaguely remember
that. So they weren't, and not that they're always in the NCAA. Sometimes they get a 16th seed, but so they elected not to. So it really was a COVID championship in the sense of who could actually go through all this. But it still was fun, especially Stanford women. Yes, I really excited about that.
Yeah, by the way, I'm thrilled to be actually able to watch real baseball games again.
I know, I was thinking about you. I was saying, you know, boring. The Red Sox, I guess they won last night, right?
Oh, they kicked some serious butt last night.
Well, it's about time. What, three games they lost?
At home, I know, it was shameful. I know. It really was. Yeah.
Anyway, so let's, that's enough.
Yeah, but it was great to see, great to see, yeah.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, around town, let me say one other thing about schools is that coming up, I think maybe it's actually, is it tomorrow? They're having the seventh, tomorrow or Thursday. Yeah. They're having
some big meeting, right?
Well, they're having
the interviews for the
public and whatever of the candidates, the three candidates who kind of pre-chosen for a school superintendent.
You have that on your website, right?
Yeah, it's on the website. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So, and then there's a school committee has now scheduled a meeting for, I guess, early next week where they're going to decide. You know,
really? So that's
yeah. They're doing final interviews and then making a decision. There is a bit of a rumor going around from people on the inside that they already knew who they were going to pick. We'll see if that turns out to be true. So
was it a national search? I don't even remember.
I think they put the word out and they got
through the networks.
They did get applicants from out of state.
Okay.
At least one of them is from out of state. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how it shakes out. You know, but anyway, I will say no more. You know, but that's happening. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see.
Good.
So let's talk a little bit about what's happening here on the sort of civic political front.
Yeah.
So they did have a city council meeting last night.
Now they've had a couple since we've met. Yes, they've had a few.
That's true.
I think they've had at least three, right?
Yeah. And, you know, just to be upfront about it, I, you know, prior to every council meeting for years, I always write I pick what I consider
comments to follow. Usually,
right. Yeah. Well, the thing is that, well, I've been trying to put it up as early as I could without comment, and then make some comments and some additional details before the meeting. Honestly, though, the topics of the meeting that happened last night, they just didn't interest me.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there going
The design one was interesting, but
you know, but the thing is, if there's just one thing that gets me a little jazzed, it's kind of hard to get your heart, get spirits up to write anything about something when it's just sort of, you know, a bowl full of nothing, you know, but I have been sort of just trying to write immediately after the fact, just, and even during the meeting, actually just put up the results of what's happening in the meeting, kind of a live update.
You put actions, but you don't have any comments.
Though, no right? commentary. No. I mean, I will put comments in next time around, I'm sure.
I thought last night there was an awful lot of time spent on one of the city manager's appointments.
You know, actually that's actually something worth mentioning.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of an awkward thing to comment on because people are so quick to judge.
But I mean, they can't nix that, right?
No, they can't. So the way it works under our charter is if it was a strong mayor system, appointments are typically just the province of the mayor.
Right.
In our system, it's the province of the city manager. And virtually none of them require city council approval. The only exceptions are the appointments to boards that were created after the fact. So things like the Cambridge Housing Authority.
I see.
The appointees for Cambridge Redevelopment Authority.
I was going to say that one, yeah.
They may be the only two, I believe. But otherwise, it's the manager just informs the council of the appointments, you know. And I actually like that system because, you know, if you were to politicize
every single thing,
you know, and you actually saw a hint of like the worst of what could happen as part of the rhetoric from some of our beloved councilors last night. Yeah. All right. So there was one person, I'm not going to name the name here, but it was an person appointed to the Board of Zoning Appeals. Mm-hmm. Seemed like, as Dennis Carlone said, you know, looks great. The resume, this looks
great. It's a woman, right? A female?
You know, so it looks like a really great appointment, you know, congratulations to the manager. But because of ethnic and racial initiatives, Councillor Mallon started the ball rolling, basically questioning the city manager's appointment.
Black and brown.
You know, I mean, and the manager flat out said, look, if in the last 10 months, of all the appointments I've made to boards and commissions, 50% are persons of color.
Yeah.
And I said, so, you know, I mean, if I was Louis, I'd be basically saying, so cut me some slack, will you? But no. You know, so it devolved, and it wasn't just Mallon. It was Mallon and Sabrina Wheeler. Mm-hmm. To a lesser degree, it was Patty Nolan and Mark McGovern, even a little jab at the end from Sumbul Siddiqui about how urgent this is. They were basically suggesting that for things like the Board of Zoning Appeals or Planning Board or anything involving housing, you know, Mr. Manager, you better just make sure you appoint people who, you know, we consider to be sort of the appropriate choices here. I was squirming listening to some of this stuff, honestly.
Well, again, the issue of payment came up for some of these positions, which Carlone has raised in the past, and then Sabrina Wheeler raised it. My snarky comment to you in an email was, take it out of your salary then. Let's make that very generous counselor salary, cut out a couple $1,000s and give it to
You know, throw them a bone here. At least cover some of their incidentals. Yeah.
How do you feel about that? I mean, it does require a little more expertise than your average commission.
Yes.
And time commitment. My God.
Right. And it's for that reason that I think by the way, as you and I know, because we've served on advisory committees, no payment. Right. So if it's a board or a commission that meets once a month and it's strictly advisory, you know, and, you know, you just sort of be there trying, you know, offer good wisdom and whatever.
Right, but nothing like the planning board or right. the zoning so there, appeal.
Jeez. So there's a few boards, planning board, board of zoning appeals come to mind probably above others that are require a lot more input and sticking your neck out too. You know, you're actually kind of in a position where somebody's going to start sort of ripping you to shreds.
Your vote matters media. And
right. So I think there is a more of a commitment to those. Now, is money what's going to actually make the difference in terms of representation?
No, because they could never give enough.
I don't see it.
But I do think something. I mean, it just seems like you're asking an awful lot of people. But if they're if they find people willing to do that,
well, you know, in once upon a time, they didn't have alternates on some of these boards.
Oh, right.
One of the modifications that has been made over the years is they expanded the membership so that they would be alternates, so that if a person wasn't around for a meeting or opted out for whatever reason, one of the alternates would step in and then become a full voting member for the purposes of
that meeting. But then they could not vote on other matters if they hadn't been in that meeting.
Right. And this varies, I think, depending on the commissions. But I think in the planning board, you have to have been, at least the rule of interpretation.
Right, that's the one I was thinking of.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But so they were factoring in some flexibility so that if it did become burdensome, you know, that there could be a little easing up, and maybe they should explore that a little bit more.
Yes.
You know, so that it's, you know.
Yes. Anyway. Not, yeah. It's just. Yeah.
But the thing is, the people who are on, they choose to do it. You know, the biggest problem, and I think the city manager kind of alluded to this.
Yeah.
And I think he kind of laughed a little bit when somebody mentioned something about this last night. The problem isn't, you know, whether you pay them or not. The problem is that there are so few people who really do want to do it, you know?
And
if you think about it,
For
recycling advisory committee, it tended to be people who were kind of gung-ho for recycling, right? If you were, so some of these boards or commissions tend to be, I never quite knew the distinction, board, commission, I think it's the same thing in a way.
Yeah.
But some of these ones are kind of like advocacy, more advocacy than anything else.
Yes.
You were on the Women's Commission for a time. I presume that, you know, that was not just a representative sample of the population of Cambridge.
Well, actually it was, they had their issues around, you're right, minority, well, we called it then minority representation. It was an ongoing issue in the women's movement. Certainly when I served, we had older and younger women, but not necessarily, and then later changed.
They weren't 50% men on the Women's Commission?
Stop.
But that's not representative then.
Hey, right? they moved the office. I forget where. They moved the office next to the Animal Commission at some point.
Really?
I think that was either early on. So you got some. This is a long time ago.
Anyway, the only point I was trying to make was that some of these boards and commissions are, by their very nature, they're structured as advisory and more advocacy oriented. The Cambridge Bicycle Committee, for example, is not, you know, saying gung-ho, we need to make it easier for cars, right?
Right, you know, exactly.
It's their nature. But then there are other ones that are kind of quasi-judicial in their role, like Board of Zoning Appeals and Planning Board, where you really want to have some expertise on the board. And you know, Dennis Carlone seemed to think that, well, if you paid them somehow, you would get that. I'm not so sure about that, because I think we have such a wealth of people in the city that, you know, have the qualifications for so many of them. It's really the issue of, do you really want to serve, you know?
Right. I mean, community development is the, you could say they're the paid one, because they're always at the planning. I don't know about zoning appeal, but I know they're always at the planning board meeting. So.
Well, I mean, the thing is, all of these boards are staffed. So there are city staff that are available, but in terms of who makes the decisions,
right?
You know, those are citizen positions, right?
But do they have like executive directors? Is there an executive director that gets paid for the planning board? No.
It's kind of an interesting question, because
if there is sometimes a commission and, well, not the recycling.
The way it's supposed to work is supposed to be like the chair of the commission is supposed to be a member, not the executive director or a city staff person.
That's what it was with the recycling.
Yes.
We didn't have an, right.
Right. But the thing is, so sometimes, you know, maybe because there is no assertion of the committee to have its own separate chair, they will basically defer to the city staff to basically run things. You know, for me personally, that's fine, you know, for advisory committees if it seems to work well that way.
Which is what we do with the recycling with Mike Orr does that.
Yeah,
he's a chairperson, but he's there. Yeah,
yeah, but you would have a potential problem in something like a planning board if, in fact, it was a city staff person,
right?
You know, who was sort of basically deciding what you can vote on and when you can vote and whatever. So you wanted insulated.
Interesting comments about this. You're right. So
Now, you know, are these various boards really properly representative? Probably not.
Right.
But, you know, that in and of itself is not a disqualifying thing from my point of view. I mean, the question is, are they good at their job? You know, as I think Dennis Carlone pointed out, it said, and two councillors were arguing why we should have the planning board should be somehow in a city that's two thirds renters, that somehow the planning board should be two thirds renters. You know, he didn't say it exactly as explicitly as that. And I think he was suggesting it was only one person who was a renter. I don't actually see that as relevant, honestly. Well,
there's two people on the council that are renters.
Okay, that was on the council. But I was thinking on the planning board.
Oh, yeah, I don't know about that.
Right. But the thing is, you know, for the planning board, as Dennis Carlone pointed out, for anything special permits regarding housing, he couldn't think of a single case when, in fact, they'd ever denied a permit for these housing developments and stuff. So, you know, the notion that somehow, you know, that they're unrepresentative, therefore their wisdom should be questioned, is a little odd to me.
I don't know.
Honestly. I'll just say this last point about it. I felt such discomfort having city councilors basically. Yeah. You know, with a person's name out there.
I know.
Effectively saying, like, how dare you?
And they didn't vote for it.
And you know, it's not the council's choice to begin with. You know,
That was bad.
I mean, the thing is, if you want to have a completely separate discussion about representativeness on boards and commissions, then do that. Do that as part of some government operations committee meeting. Don't take the opportunity of a particular individual's appointment
really
to somehow call into question that person's legitimacy. I mean, that was just rude.
Yep. So, they'll remember that
person. Yeah. So anyway, so that was one other thing. There was one other item that was a city council order. I mean, it's a lot of things really, but there's one city council order that I thought was, it's really kind of came as a bit of a surprise a few weeks ago. It's something, you know, the governor pushed this thing called the housing choice package.
Okay.
And partly because of COVID, there was support with the legislature and they actually approved this. And one thing that nobody, and it was basically to promote housing growth, you know, and part of that included a provision to reduce the required majority for certain housing developments from a two-thirds approval.
Right, but didn't Baker propose that a while ago?
Yes, he did. He did. Okay. And the thing is, it sat there and the legislature didn't really act upon it, but then it finally did in the midst of COVID. And I don't know to what degree the emergency setting
had
accelerated it.
Okay.
But so it passed. Now, it actually came as a bit of a shock, I think, there was a city council meeting where they were discussing the Northwest Alewife Quadrangle, quadrangle zoning petition, which was voted down.
Right.
Even though the planning board gave it a thumbs up. So it can still have a second life here.
Yeah.
But it was announced that there was this opinion from the city solicitor that, in fact, because there was a certain percentage of housing as part of this development, even though at its core it was not principally a housing development, that because of the housing choice legislation?
Yeah.
It would require only a simple majority vote in order for the zoning petition to pass. It didn't have that majority, by the way, but
I didn't think so.
It was voted down, but that normally you're waiting for two thirds majority, six out of nine votes and not five out of nine votes. So right there, you know, the night that they could have approved it, they said, well, that's according to this. So there was a city council order on the agenda last night. calling to have a meeting of, I forget whether it was a housing committee.
I didn't read it thoroughly. I should have. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically sort of to discuss what this really means.
Okay.
Now, first off, I just want to have some clarity about what does the
legislation actually
say?
Right.
To what projects does the simple majority, by the way, I prefer the two thirds. And I can give you some good reasons for it.
No, but, I can see that. You know, it's pretty crucial. Yeah. It should have more weight.
Yeah. And I also don't like the whole concept of one-way zoning. I wrote about this in December 2018 when this was being talked about at the city council level. You know, the notion that you would take a two-thirds majority to upzone, but you need a bare minimum majority to upzone.
Right.
If you wanted to actually said, I think we made a mistake, you would need a two-thirds vote in order to go the other way. Hmm. Right. So at that point, you're basically ceding your local authority to the state law, to some degree.
Right.
So I have some issues with that. Anyway, it's a little bit unsettled. I'd like to know more about it. I guess we're just starting to run a little down on time here, but so maybe we talk a little bit more about it. But it's a little bit up in the air. But I think some of the councilors actually want to take advantage of it to actually drive harder now. So we'll see.
All right. Anyway, so we will see you in the next segment.
We'll be back in a few minutes.